I'm joined in studio with Ilana Darcy. And Ilana is the chair of Endometriosis Association of Ireland. Hi, Ilana.
Hi, Yvonne, how are you? Thanks for having me on today.
Good. So today we're going to just have a chat really about, I suppose, the lack of inadequate services and knowledge really about the condition.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there is a lack of knowledge around it. I do believe that's changing. I think awareness is growing at all levels in society. And I think, you know, the fact that the HSE are trying to fund a national endometriosis framework does speak to that. So it is changing, but there's quite a catch-up to be done with regards to this disease in particular. And there's still an awful lot of challenges accessing a diagnosis or treatment in Ireland. And it's safe to say that the standard of care in Ireland is not where it needs to be by any shape or form. So, yeah, there's a lot of ground to cover.
And I suppose, how do we address that? How can we change that?
Well, so in fairness, they are trying to put in a framework, as I've mentioned. It's likely to be published this month at some stage. And I think that framework, it is planning to have multidisciplinary care because of the nature of the disease. It can, you know, it can occur anywhere on the body. So multidisciplinary care is crucially important, both from a surgical point of view, but also outside of, you know, just surgery, in terms of other complementary treatments like pelvic physio, psychology, dietitian, etc. And also even, you know, the support functions, the radiologists, that it's crucial to have radiologists, surgeons, and, you know, support groups that all are experienced with endometriosis, because it is difficult to diagnose. It's very hard to diagnose on imaging, especially if you're not used or have experience in endometriosis itself. It can be easily misdiagnosed for other things. And, you know, the way the care pathways are at the moment, it can be hard to find the right treatment. And Ireland lacks the skill set needed to effectively treat the disease. So there's a lot of people, you know, having no choice really but to go abroad for treatment, which is, you know, not where we'd ideally want things to be. So there is recognition of all of this, and the framework is planning to have two super regional centres in Tallaght and Cork, and then there'll be five regional endometriosis clinics in the maternity network. But I suppose, like, the question remains as to how long it'll take that service to ramp up. It's not funded fully. There'll be phases, but we know that our healthcare system in general is broken. It is under-resourced. There is all sorts of illnesses vying for, you know, scarce resources that you know, there's just not enough. There's not enough beds. There's not enough capacity. There's not enough surgeons. So there's a whole, you know, there's a whole issue with healthcare in general in Ireland. And then obviously endometriosis trying to fight its kind of way to be heard more within that space. So the framework should help. How long it will take to get there remains to be seen. And when they do ramp up, whether it'll be sufficient, because the thing that's crucially lacking in Ireland is data, any official statistics. Like, we're relying on international statistics in other countries, that maybe more research has been done in terms of estimating the number of people affected, etc. So there's an awful lot of long way to go, and a lot of gaps to be closed in understanding it properly.
I suppose really for anyone listening, what is it? What is endometriosis?
It is where tissue that is similar to the lining of the womb, cells that grow elsewhere in the body. There's not enough research done, so nobody knows what causes it. There's some theories out there, but nobody knows what causes it. Initially, it would have been thought to be a reproductive or gynecological issue. And that's, you know, and I suppose it's most frequently found in the pelvic area, which is why generally gyne is the route in through to treatment for it. But it has been found on every organ of the body. So it behaves similar enough to the way the tissue of the lining of the womb would behave in that kind of hormonal changes, and it because of that, it kind of builds up, tries to shed, got nowhere to go. It can cause pain, inflammation, adhesions, etc. There's various stages of it. You know, it could be stage 1 through to 4, depending on the how proliferant it is. There is, you know, superficial versus deep infiltrating endometriosis. It can even be found on the nerves, which can cause pain. There's so many facets to it, so many different ways that it presents, so many different symptoms. You could have people who have pain with periods, pain every day of the month, not just when they have a period, pain passing urine, having a bowel movement, having sex, fatigue, chronic fatigue. And then obviously, you know, there's a lot of kind of mental symptoms that go alongside the disease, you know, largely because of some of the things we've spoken about, you know, not being understood properly, etc., that, you know, can also have psychological impacts on people because it affects their day-to-day life, and it can be very, very hard to get the treatment and diagnosis needed, and that can have severe psychological impacts on people as well.
So really, it's a lack of understanding of it and experience in the health profession that, you know, participates in, like, I mean, I suppose there's a lot of women have it and they're not diagnosed. And I know it says here that there's an estimated that approximately 1 in 10 women suffer. But would you think the number is probably higher than that? Or
at a guess, I'd say yes. At a guess, I'd say yes. Now, you know, how people are impacted varies. You know, you can have people where it's, you know, your body, you're chronically aware that you have it because you've got debilitating pain. You have other people who have no pain at all. Like, you know, there have been cases where people have had stage 4 endometriosis and their organs kind of stuck together and they've no pain, so they didn't know that they have it. Some people only have it diagnosed when they start facing fertility issues. Then there's other people who, like myself, I was put on the pill at the age of 16 because I had PCOS, which is much easier to diagnose. That's an ultrasound and blood test. And, you know, as soon as I was put on the pill, I forgot about the pain because for me, the pill suppressed my pain. And so, you know, I didn't think about it again until I started my fertility journey. So, you know, everybody is affected differently, which also makes it really difficult because, you know, there's no kind of 4 core symptoms that affect every single woman. It is very much unique.
Yeah, that's awful, really, I suppose. And like, can it be inherited, or is that the case, or do we know?
We don't know. I think there seems to be thought that there is a genetic link. We don't know. My mum didn't suffer from, her periods were nothing like mine. But, you know, as to whether there was something on my dad's side, I don't know. You know, I don't think there's enough, there isn't enough research, and we don't know for sure. But, yeah, I'd say there's probably a strong possibility that there is a genetic link. And definitely some of the people we speak to, you'll speak to mothers and daughters, or, you know, it could be that, you know, the mother might have had it, but just put up with it because, you know, years ago, maybe that was, you know, it was more difficult to maybe go to the doctor and say, I'm having painful periods. This is, you know, go back a few decades ago. So they might have just put up with it in silence. And now people are more and more speaking up about it. And that's what we need, because we need people talking about it, not just accepting and living with it, so that we can get the issues addressed.
Yeah, I suppose there was a tendency, you know, years ago, you're right, not to talk about those things. And
yeah, there were women's issues, you know. There's a bit of a stigma attached to speaking about things like that. So, you know, people didn't. And, you know, it's great that people are now, because it's awareness that we need to give, especially to young girls, so that they know what is and isn't normal, and that they can start advocating for themselves to help the system change.
And regarding treatment, what kinds of treatment would be used?
So there's they call hormonal treatment. I wouldn't say it's a treatment. It's, you know, the use of the pill or the, you know, coil or any of the kind of hormonal kind of types. They suppress it. They don't treat it. And what can happen is that you know, it can suppress it so you can get on with things, but it doesn't stop, it doesn't necessarily stop the disease spreading, potentially doing damage. I mean, there's people out there who've lost organs because of endometriosis, you know, and I personally don't call it a treatment, although that's how it's kind of termed. The only way to diagnose it is invasively. There's no markers. You can't do a blood test. As I mentioned earlier, imaging is not reliable unless you've got an extremely well-trained eye and know what you're looking for. And even at that, I don't think still you couldn't just rely on imaging. The only way to diagnose it is via laparoscopy, which is done under general anesthesia, and a camera is inserted into the pelvic cavity. And it's all the organs are checked and it's looked for. But again, you know, unless the person doing that is well trained and experienced with endometriosis, especially if somebody's got stage one or two, where maybe it's a minimal amount, it could easily be missed. And this is, you know, part of the problem. So then when the treatment comes around, treatment is either ablation or excision. And there is more ablation done in Ireland than excision. In other countries in the world, they would definitely, you know, the narrative would be that excision is the gold standard and that ablation is less effective, higher recurrence rate, etc. So again, with the framework that should be coming out, that the plan would be that the people in the super regional centres in Tallaght and Cork and in the regional endo clinics would be able to perform excision surgery. But, you know, as to how long it'll take those surgeons to train up to the required level of experience needed to be able to adequately treat the population of Ireland, I mean, I don't know. I don't think they know. So, you know, it is moving in the right direction, but it's moving definitely too slow. And, you know, it's the kind of the piece in between. So it's the current generation as to what that generation can do to prevent the next generation going through what we've gone through. I'd love to say that overnight, you know, all ails will be solved and everybody currently experiencing endo will be treated sufficiently. I'd say, unfortunately, it's going to be more of a case of the current community uniting together to a stronger voice so that we can advocate for the right change, the right level of resources, so that the next generation don't have to suffer like we did. Because you know yourself how long things take to, you know, get implemented in yes. Ireland. I mean, as I said, it's fighting in a broken healthcare system. So, you know, I think it's an unfortunate reality, I think, that I don't think anything's going to change overnight. I wish it would.
And just for anybody listening, Ilana, what supports are in place? Like if somebody is feeling like they're suffering and maybe they've not got, you know, answers from their doctor, or they haven't gone to anyone, or if they've a daughter or somebody, where would they go? Is there any support in place?
Not really. And this is the unfortunate other part of it. So as part of the framework, you know, as somebody who's maybe in the system being treated, there, as I mentioned, there will be psychologists. There's a psychologist in place in the clinic in Cork, and there's one, I think, there's a post available in Tallaght. It hasn't been filled, best of my knowledge. And the plan would be that there'd be a psychologist in each of the regional endo clinics too, but that would require investment, recruitment, et cetera, et cetera. So that's from the point of view of, you know, maybe somebody who's gone, managed to get through into the clinic, you know, they've maybe had their surgery and they've got some support then. But all those other people who haven't yet gotten into the system, haven't managed to get the right treatment, you know, people who are experiencing gaslighting, people who, you know, even at GP level, because it still happens quite an awful lot, self-doubt, because obviously, you know, if you're being told, you know, it's just a bad period, you start questioning yourself and how you're feeling. And, you know, if the person beside you is saying, well, I get my period every month and it's no big deal, like, what's the problem? You know, that self-doubt weighs in on you. At the end of the day, you can't see somebody's pain. So there's a big part of the community, you just feel completely unheard at the moment, because that's the problem. They have nowhere really to go. You've got the anguish of people who are struggling with infertility. You've got the grief of people who have lost organs, some of them unnecessarily. Anxiety of people travelling abroad for treatment. And you're like, you're literally on a plane coming home after having surgery, and your recovery time, and you're sitting on a plane. It's hardly ideal. And you've got the trauma from multiple surgeries or failed surgeries or unnecessary surgeries. Some people have PTSD as a result of it, you know, from being in daily chronic pain and that impact of the day-to-day life. And at the moment, there isn't really any support there for these people. So, you know, the EAI is a small charity. The charity was set up in 1987, and it's historically volunteer-led, which just means a working board, no staff, no funding. Very hard to grow to the size that's needed. We were lucky to be able to hire 2 part-time staff a few months ago, so we're trying to change that. You know, and people can absolutely email into us, info@endometriosis.ie. But, you know, until we can really grow to a significant size, we again are going to be limited in terms of the support that we can offer people. So my call would be to anyone listening today, if you believe you have endometriosis, if you've been diagnosed, suspected, you know, been told you don't have it, but you think you might, struggling with infertility or being told you've unexplained infertility, or even, you know, just suddenly having a bad perimenopause journey, because endometriosis can complicate that too, to join us and become a member. Membership is free. And, you know, what that means is if people become members, they consent for us to contact them. And if we could grow our membership base to a decent number, we could start to gather some basic data. And with data, then, when we're going to speak to policymakers, data is so much stronger than anecdotal stories on social media. If you have actual data going, we surveyed X number of people, and here's what it's like having endometriosis in Ireland, we'd hope that that would help them listen more. And as we could grow as a charity, it would give us a better chance of getting funding. Because if there's more demand for support than more demand for a charity like us, we have a better case to go to the HSE to say, look, you need to fund us. You know, we need funding, we need to grow our staff. And then obviously if we grow the number of staff we have, we can increase the support for the community. But, you know, it's one of these chicken and egg situations that we're in at the moment. And unfortunately, there's limited support available to people. There is a lot of independent advocates online who are great at supporting people. There's some various support groups that people set up themselves. Support groups is something we'd like to do ourselves, but, you know, we need resources to be able to make things sustainable, you know, in terms of workload, etc. So there's a lot that could be done. You know, we'd love to kind of unite the community a little bit more to kind of in some way use the volunteer network to put proper supports in place. So who knows? And, you know, here's hoping that things can change in the future. But at the moment, the horizon's a little bit bleak. But, you know, there are beacons of hope there for things to change in the future for my daughter and her generation, to hope that they don't go through this.
It just really, we just need people to get together and maybe talk more, because I do still think that sometimes women aren't always taken very seriously when they talk about period pain and Asher, go on. And I do think there is a bit of that to it as well. And I suppose men don't understand it, and that's the simple fact of it. But if people could come together, you know, and make your group, your association stronger, so that it's an association that represents everybody. But I think people need to talk up as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's it. If we can come together as a community, I think if we unite our voices, we will be stronger together. But, it, you know, there's no one person in the community that can do it on their own. And we all need to come together to support each other to get to where we need to go. Absolutely talking about it, you know, helping fathers, partners, bosses, teachers, whoever it might be, because it's been said so many times. And even when we were in the Oireachtas in June, one of the male politicians there said if it was a man's disease, quite frankly, we wouldn't be talking about it, because it would have been dealt with by now. And I've heard lots of other people make similar comments. And so there is an awareness of that, and I think there's an awareness to change. We had our conference on the 30th of March, and we had a great turnout, and we're glad to see, you know, some men there too, you know, wanting to support their partners and things. So things are definitely changing. But the speed of change will be dependent on, I think, the community coming together and just that louder voice to really push things along.
Lana, thank you so much. I hope to talk to you again at some point, and maybe there'll be better news and that things will have progressed. But I'd like to thank you for your insight into this And thank you so much, Ilana.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me and for giving airtime to this topic, because it is so important, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.